When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Monica Packer, and you're listening to About Progress, where we are about progress made practical. When Brad and I were first married, just like everyone else from the 2007 to maybe 2013 era, we started a family blog. And I just recently rediscovered it, and it had been maybe 10 years, and I went down this wormhole. And one of the wormholes I went down were these dramatic entries I had from when I was a very stressed out new middle school teacher. When I entered my first year of teaching, I knew it was going to be very challenging. I did not know that the prep load my school gave me was a type of schedule that more experienced teachers would quit on the spot when given that load. I taught 7th grade history, 7th grade English, 7th grade reading, 8th grade history, and 8th grade English my first year of teaching, and only one of those classes repeated. So that class load, coupled with my class sizes that were well beyond the legal limit, and me struggling to discipline my urban suburban kids who were dealing with far more serious things than what happened at school, including violence and poverty and hunger, I either found myself working around the clock or staring blankly at blogs on my computer instead of taking on my lesson planning. I knew I was stressed. I mean, I was so exhausted. My hair was falling out. I wasn't being social. I was close to tears all the time. But honestly, I thought it was more due to me not hacking it as a teacher. I sincerely questioned my life choices and if I really should have gone after this teaching profession to begin with. Stress is so tricky. We all think we know what it looks like and feels like, but when it comes down to it, there are actually a million flavors of stress. So our guest says today. For some of us, we experience it in our brains, maybe with heightened anxiety, depression, overwhelm, and more. For others of us, we experience stress in our bodies with tense muscles or racing hearts, tummy issues, and also more there too. And for many of us, it's both brain or body, or it's absent of brain or body because we get in the fight and flight mode and run ourselves ragged until there is no more running. I have found both in myself and in others that we tend to self-blame, though, instead of validating our stress, at least until a point where we break down in more ways than one, and we seem to take down others connected with us on the way down. If you're in an especially difficult period of chronic stress, today I want to help you get the information I wish Teacher Monica had. Dr. Aditi Nurarkar is on the show to help us better understand what stress is, how it manifests itself in some surprising ways, and simple strategies we can start using today to better manage and reset from our stress. Dr. Aditi Nurarkar is a Harvard physician, nationally recognized stress expert, and author of The 5 Resets. Dr. Nurarkar has been featured in countless elite publications like The Wall Street Journal, Oprah Magazine, Elle, and far more, in addition to making more than 300 appearances as a medical commentator on MSNBC, CNN, NBC, ABC, and CBS News. Dr. Nurarkar's expertise on stress comes from working with thousands of patients throughout her years as a primary care physician and director of an integrative medicine program at Harvard's Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. She is now a lecturer at Harvard Medical School in the Division of Global Health and Social Medicine and serves as the co-director of the Clinical Clerkship in Community Engagement. This interview is so powerful, and it's all coming up after a quick break for our sponsors. I planted tulip bulbs for my first time ever last fall, and I have been so delightfully surprised to see that they are poking out of the ground, and pretty soon the flowers are going to come out, and it's making me feel like it is spring. And once spring rolls around, there's always things that I am recommitting to, from deep cleaning and organizing my home to doing some interior design projects, preparing for our garden, which is my second year only. But I also reprioritize my do something list. If you haven't made much progress in yours, and if that even includes not making one, you are in good company. Here at About Progress, we believe it is never too late, and that includes it's never too late to make your do something list or recommit. To help you with either of those, I would encourage you to take my Do Something List training. It has a free video workshop as well as a workbook and tons of examples from real progressors from our community and the DSLs they've created for this year. Join me in recommitting to you via your DSL. You can find our free training at aboutprogress.com/DSL. Dr. Aditi Nurikar, welcome to About Progress.
Thank you so much for having me, Monica. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Well, as you know, I'm a big fan. I feel like I'm your number one stalker. I almost had to tell you, don't worry. I'm a safe person. But I just can't help it in many ways. I feel like I've learned so much from you on something that has been a longstanding struggle, I think, for so many of us. But you teach about stress in ways that make me feel both seen and normal and also give me a way out. Let's start, though, with you doing what you do so well. You talk straight, and I want you to give it to us straight, about stress in general. Just why is stress bad? And is it even bad? And how do we know if we are perpetually stressed? Because actually, this is one of the funny things. I think a lot of us don't think we are, but we are. We just think it's normal.
So currently, right now, if you took a snapshot of the world and looked at the numbers of stress and burnout, we have unprecedented rates of both. Across industry, 7 out of 10 people have had at least one feature of stress and burnout, and approximately 50 to 70% across industries are feeling a sense of stress and burnout. So if you are feeling this way, you are not alone. It is not your fault. These numbers show that in a room of 30 people, 21 people are struggling with stress and burnout. So this is no longer the exception. It's the rule. And the other really important thing to recognize is when you and I and everyone else, when we talk about stress, right? Like you may say, oh, I'm so stressed, or I might say, it's been a really stressful week. What does that actually mean? In fact, what we're talking about scientifically is maladaptive stress, or the unhealthy, bad kind of stress. But in fact, there are two kinds of stress, and not all stress is created equal. We have healthy, good, positive stress, in scientific terms, adaptive stress, and maladaptive or unhealthy stress. This stress is dysfunctional, unproductive, can cause all sorts of mental health and physical health manifestations. And so the goal of life is not to live a life with zero stress. It is impossible and biologically implausible to do that, because healthy stress moves your life forward, you know, rooting for your favorite sports team, getting a new job or a promotion, the birth of a child, planning a vacation, meeting your new best friend. All of these are versions of healthy, positive stress that help move your life forward. The goal is not to live a life with zero stress. It is to live a life with healthy, manageable stress and to reset our stress away from these unhealthy, maladaptive levels back to the healthy levels so it can help us rather than harm us.
How do we know if we're stuck in the maladaptive version of that?
So right now, when you're talking about stress and a version of stress, chronic stress is burnout. We can talk about the difference. Typically, what you want to think about is, are you different from your baseline? And for many people, that baseline or where you started, you might not even remember, because chances are, I would say for most of your listeners today, both you and I and everyone else, we are stressed because of the numbers, and particularly because the past 4 to 5 years, I won't talk about the, you know, the P word pandemic, but in 2020, we all suffered very greatly, both at the individual level and global level. It was a collective and individual trauma, so to speak. Our brains and our bodies are expertly designed to handle short bursts of acute stress. But when that becomes a chronic ongoing issue, that's when problems can arise. So during the pandemic, we shored up our internal reserves, kept it together at all costs. We thought it was going to be a 2 to maybe 4 week thing of being quarantined, right? Like stuck at home. And instead, it was a shifting finish line. And so we went from a pandemic sprint to a marathon. It was a cognitive leap that we weren't prepared to make and certainly not trained for. And over time, that goalpost has just continued to shift. The onslaughts on us over the past 4 to 5 years have been relentless. Your brain and your body can handle short bursts of stress, but not when it's ongoing like this. We've undergone, of course, the pandemic. Then we had a racial reckoning here in the U.S. Then multiple climate disasters. Now around the world, there's humanitarian crises. There's an upcoming election. That cycle of bad news just doesn't end. Mm-hmm. And that unfortunately has an impact on your brain and your body and can lead to stress. So if you are feeling, you know, the mental manifestations of stress are vast. You could have anxiety or depression, lethargy, fatigue, or anxiousness and feeling that sense of hypervigilance and quick to anger. There are a million flavors of stress. Physically, some people have no mental manifestations of stress or burnout and instead might develop physical symptoms like worsening headaches or neck pain, shoulder pain, back pain, abdominal discomfort, dizziness, nausea. So the list is vast and it is very much a person-to-person situation. The key, if you're trying to figure out, am I feeling stressed? Do I have these negative impacts of stress? Think about how you were maybe in 2017 or 2016 and think about how you are now. Chances are, for most of us, you have that baseline underlying stress simply because you are living as an informed citizen in the times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I joke that there is a pre- and post-pandemic phase that I experienced just due to the stress. And that happens. We all go through those seasonal shifts of there being more stress in ways that are chronic. You mentioned how burnout is a different version of that. Can you tell us what burnout is and how that's different than just a typical stress load?
Your brain, under normal circumstances, you function in resilient mode. And that's led by a part of your brain called the prefrontal cortex. If you put your hand over your forehead, it's the area right behind your forehead. That area governs things like memory, planning, organization, forward strategic thinking. In layman's terms, adulting, right? It's called general executive functions. It's adulting. Now, under stress, your brain is governed by a different region called the amygdala. And this is a small almond-shaped structure deep in your brain. And it is cave person mode. Its sole purpose is survival and self-preservation. We can function for short periods of time in cave person mode. Like I said, your brain and your body is expertly adaptive to handle these short bursts of stress. But when that cave person mode becomes chronic, that is when burnout sets in. So you don't have that rise in your stress response in your body governed by your amygdala and then back to a baseline comfort level. And then again, you know, you think about like the waves of an ocean. It's like a peak and a valley and a peak and a valley. Now we have that peak, but we never really get back to where it once was. It's just the next peak and the next peak and the next peak. So those onslaughts, that cycle of trauma, unrest, and all of these things that are happening both in our individual lives because things happen to us, but also externally out there in the world, shape our stress response acutely. But over time, with these constant onslaughts, it can lead to burnout. And so the real question is, how do you reverse burnout? Because both stress and burnout, the good news is that they are fully reversible. So that's the good news. It's not all doom and gloom. But the real question is, how can you do this? How can you reverse your stress and burnout in the middle of a messy, overscheduled, overburdened and complicated life? We can't all just jet off for 6 months or a year to Bali for a surf holiday. I mean, sign me up for that plan.
But me too. I don't even surf. I do that.
I just hang out on the beach. But, you know, the reality of life is that we have constraints. We have obligations, family constraints, financial constraints, time constraints, that is not feasible. And ultimately, you come back from that wonderful 6 month vacation and everything is, you know, not the same and hasn't been addressed. So really, it's about resetting your stress in the here and now, in the messy middle of your life. Really thinking very much about how you can work with your biology of stress to rewire your brain and your body for less stress and more resilience. in the midst of this cycle that is just ongoing.
It's fascinating that the effects of stress are so biological and how they come from a, you know, a good place too of us trying to survive and to function well in the world, but it can just come to a place of not functioning well. And this is where I kind of get a chicken and the egg question with stress. And I think in large part, it connects to something I track both in myself and my friends and women I work with, where we downplay that we get to deserve to feel stressed. You know, when we're talking about the news and all that's going on there, and we just think, well, I'm not there. I'm not dealing with that. So I don't get to feel stressed, or I don't feel stressed. My body's just, I just have ulcers all the time, or I'm just snappy with my kids a lot. So that's not stress. It's just me. It's me. It's my fault. Something wrong with me. So the question here is it real? You know, is it in our minds? Is it circumstance driven? And I know that's a really confusing question, but I think that is the point here, is it can be confusing when we're trying to piece this out and figure out how we're feeling stress and why we're feeling stress. So is stress real? And how is it existing for a lot of people?
Stress is very real, and we hear these sorts of messages all the time. It's just in your head. It's mind over matter. Come on, yeah. Toughen up. You can do it. And that's all a manifestation of toxic resilience. So I've used that word resilience throughout our conversation, and you may have heard it yourself. There's lots of messaging around resilience. Oh, you can handle it. Just take on a little more. Mm-hmm. You're resilient. You're not living in a war zone. You have food on the table. You're resilient. We have been inundated from our childhood with messages of toxic resilience. And what is resilience? So in scientific terms, the true definition of resilience is your innate biological ability to adapt, recover, and grow in the face of life's challenges. Now, that is true resilience. True resilience honors your human limitations and boundaries. Mm. It understands your need for rest and recovery. Only then can you be truly resilient. Toxic resilience, however, that word resilience has really morphed over the past several years. I hear that word now and I cringe and I have a visceral response. You likely do too, because toxic resilience is mind over matter, productivity at all costs. Mm-hmm. Just keep going. You don't need rest. You don't need recovery. It's like the Energizer Bunny mentality. It just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going without a rest. And it's a manifestation of hustle culture. It's not even true resilience. So we have been fed this idea of toxic resilience ever since we were children. We were told at a very young age that we must endure high levels of discomfort. And only that is truly resilient. I would argue that the biological need for rest and recovery is not just a nice to have and luxury. In fact, it changes your brain and is very protective. It is a need and not a want. And so when you hear things like, oh, stress is just in your head, just toughen up, it's a mind over matter issue. Yes, stress is in your head because it does impact your brain and your body, but not in the way that you think so, and certainly not with that messaging. So that messaging is very problematic. And so if you are having that experience of stress and you are not feeling good, that's real and you have to take it seriously. And yes, you could compare yourself to, well, someone in this other place or in this other country or this other family or household is dealing with so much more. Yes, of course, people are managing lots of varying degrees of difficulty, but that doesn't take away from your lived experience of feeling a lot of stress.
So this is already soothing me in many ways. It's also clarifying things for me too, because yeah, it's so easy to feel like you have to hit a certain threshold of things happening in your circumstances to count as being stressed, or even things with your body or even your mind, if you're having mental health struggles that are stress connected. And also that you have to have this certain threshold of resilience, like you said, that is really the mind over matter bent. But you talked about earlier how this can be reversed. Let's move into what we can do about this. How do we reverse the effects of stress by, I think, better managing it with that true resilience you brought up,
if you are feeling worse now than you were in 2020, you are not alone. We are seeing an uptick in mental health conditions, in stress and burnout now. And the reason is because your brain is built like a dam. Under periods of acute or chronic stress, for example, in 2020, 2021, you shored up your internal reserves and you really kept it together at all costs. Of course, people suffered, but chances are you really held it together. And I've seen this with my cancer patients. You know, they get a diagnosis of cancer and they go through their cancer, chemotherapy, radiation, et cetera. They come to see me and they've held it together. They get that first clean bill of health at the end of their treatment. They're in my office the next day weeping, saying, I should be celebrating. How come I don't feel this way? And it's that moment in time right now where we've come out of a very difficult time. And now it's supposed to be a celebration, like, oh, we survived this horrible, terrible thing that happened to all of us across the world. And now we should really feel a sense of being, you know, relaxed and without any stress and in some ways rejoicing for coming out of this difficult time. And that's not how your brain works. Your brain is built like a dam. So during an acute episode, whatever's happening in the world, you shore up, keep it together. And then when you feel psychologically safe, the dam breaks. Your two emotions emerge. And it can be a deluge. So now, for many of us, there's that sense of psychological safety simply because we are living at a time where we may feel not acutely threatened. Of course, we're seeing lots of things in the news and around the world, but perhaps in our own lives and in our own towns and families and communities, whereas back in 2021 and 2020, certainly, we did feel that sense of hypervigilance. So I would say that if you are feeling bad right now, perhaps worse now than you were before, you are not alone. It's not your fault. It's a very normal, healthy process. And the only way around is through. It's called the delayed stress response. It happens to all of us. And likely you may be experiencing that now. So how do you get out of that delayed stress response? How do you move through? And how can you reset your stress and your burnout and reverse the process? Because it is reversible. It doesn't happen overnight. Typically takes anywhere from 3 months to a year to fully reverse from burnout, depending on how bad your burnout has become. But you will start seeing changes and you can build new habits within 8 weeks. And the reason is because it takes about 8 weeks for your brain to create a new habit. And when you build a new habit, understand that you falling off the wagon and getting back on and then not doing it and getting back on is part of habit formation. It is how your brain rewires itself to build better habits. And so it's more important to do something every day than once in a while. So there's a couple of very simple strategies. I talk about this in the five resets. So the first reset is creating a MOST goal. And MOST is an acronym. Okay. It stands for M is motivating, O, objective, S, small, and T, timely. Often when we are thinking about having less stress or less burnout or another goal that we may have, having more energy or better sleep or better physical fitness or mental fitness, where the destination is and where you are at the moment feels very vast and far. Mm-hmm. And that's not very motivating. We know stress is bad. We know burnout is bad. But it's about taking those actions. And how do you take an action to get to where you need to go? And so create a MOST goal, and this first reset can help you. And the reason it's important is, like we talked about, when we're feeling a sense of stress, we are living in that amygdala, cave person mode. We are hypervigilant, focused on survival and self-preservation. That part of our brain, the adulting brain, that is responsible for strategic thinking, making a plan, moving forward, the prefrontal cortex, that's not working that great because the energy is taken over by the amygdala. And so it's about shifting gears, moving out of that amygdala mode back into that prefrontal cortex mode, and that first reset can do that for you. Because when you are feeling a sense of stress, it's hard to get out of your own way.
Yes.
Think about the times when you've been extremely stressed or feeling burned out. It's very difficult to plan for a week in advance or even 2 weeks in advance. Often you're just living minute to minute, hour to hour, you know, at best day to day.
Okay.
You just don't have that kind of bandwidth. And quite literally, your brain uses a different part of the brain when you are feeling a sense of stress. It's the amygdala versus the prefrontal cortex.
So when I hear you describing about creating your MOST goal and how that uses more of a part of your brain that you can't easily access when you're feeling stressed, this is where I'm like, but then how do you do that? How do you move from being back here in the amygdala to being up here in the prefrontal cortex? How do we actually do that?
There are three strategies in this reset that help you move out of that amygdala fight or flight cave person mode and back into that thriving prefrontal cortex mode. And the way you do that is first you create a most goal. And so there's, you know, step by step, we can walk through it. I've done this with many of my patients because people come to me when they've been struggling with their stress and burnout. And so my job is to hold up a mirror and help them figure out what is your most goal, what really drives you forward. For many people, it's very straightforward, your most goal. It's not this existential, vast meaning and purpose exercise. It is simply, what do you want to achieve in 3 months? So okay. For some people, some patients of mine have said, I want to have enough energy, physical energy, to throw a softball with my granddaughter. Or people have said, I want to have decreased pain so I can go on a bike trip through Holland. Mm-hmm. I want to sleep well enough that I can engage better at work. There's so many most goals. Again, it's very personal, but it's these sorts of exercises help you get to what is that North Star for you. Okay. Your most goal can, of course, change, and it should change as you continue on your journey towards less stress and more resilience. The goal is that you meet that most goal and then you create a new goal for yourself. So let's say you have a most goal, and then how do you get there? There is a strategy called the backwards plan. And so it's about moving, thinking about achieving that goal. And what's the step right before you get to that goal? And then what's the step right before that step? And then that step. So these are small steps that you are taking to get to that most goal, then you kind of see your way forward rather than seeing something in the distance, this behemoth that you feel like, oh, sure, I'm never going to be able to achieve that. So why bother trying, right? And so for me, I can give you my personal example, because I became a doctor with an expertise in stress because I was a stress patient looking for answers myself and I couldn't find them. And one of the ways that I helped myself is that I wanted to engage in some sort of movement program every day. I had a state-of-the-art gym in my building. I was working 80 hours a week as a medical resident. Hmm. And I went down to the basement. I looked at the fancy equipment and the mirrors everywhere and the loud techno music, and I walked right out. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't engage in that sort of behavior. Again, it felt very aspirational, didn't fit my immediate needs. And certainly when I was in cave person mode, it just didn't feel good. And so I took a walk around the block. It was one walk around the block, and that felt good. So the next day, I added a few more minutes and took a 10-minute walk around the block. And the day after that, a 20-minute walk around the block. And so over time, I did meet my most goal because I wanted to create some sort of movement program in the middle of my life, working 80 hours a week. I was a stressed resident. I was having difficulty sleeping and really just a very dark and challenging time for me. And that was one of the many interventions that I used for myself. But it didn't start by going into some state-of-the-art gym and suddenly getting this motivation to exercise. It happened in very small, bite-sized steps. And so that is what that first reset helps you do. It helps you get out of your own way, create a roadmap to get to where you'd like to go. And then through backwards planning and a couple of other strategies in that first reset, helps you figure out exactly the steps that you need to take. For me, it was quite literally steps, but for others, it could be another kind of goal, the steps that you need to take to get there.
Let's take a quick break for our sponsors. Hopefully you heard that I have transitioned my self-paced course, the Sticky Habit Method, into now a live version of the course. That means I teach the lessons live. And in addition to that, we have weekly coaching calls that go with the lessons too, all in a 21-day intensive. And it's called the Sticky Habit Intensive. We finished our first round back at the end of February, and it was so astonishing how much the women learned and changed, even for me. I wanted to share one woman's experience in general. This is her whole review of the Sticky Habit Intensive. She said, I prefer to learn and study on my own, and the idea of a live class video made me uncomfortable and nervous. This was my first time taking a live online course, and I was so surprised by how much I engaged with the community and enjoyed it. This is a great way to relearn habit formation. Monica is a fantastic teacher and so supportive toward everyone. It felt comforting rather than scary to share the struggles we individually have, both with her and the other participants. I will reap the benefits of what I learned in this course far into the future. It was definitely worth my time, effort, and money. I looked forward to all of the calls and listening to the other women share their stories, and I was and still am inspired to relearn habit formation. I really love this woman's experience, and she was not unique. I want you to not be unique either. Join us in learning how to form sustainable habits, even with less time, low energy, and limited support, because that is who this intensive is designed for. Our next Sticky Habit Intensive is going to be coming up soon, just in time for you to gain some habits that will help you move throughout the spring and summer. To get on the wait list and be the first in the know, also first dibs to our spots that will now be capped for each of these intensives, go to aboutprogress.com/intensive. Again, get on the wait list to reserve your spot before the doors open to the public. That's aboutprogress.com/intensive. What I love so much about that first reset is for those who get stuck in thinking they have to have a giant 20-part plan and how they're going to heal everything, it's going back to what matters most. And I love that you even just phrasing that question is the answer is often just right there. Like, I just want to feel this way in my body. I want to be able to have this experience with the people I love. And that's where they can start. And also the trickle-down effect that you talked about, how not only you can get to that point step by step, but then once you're there, there's another what's next, what's most important next. So that's such an incredible reset.
Often when we're feeling a sense of stress and burnout, you say to yourself, you know, what's the matter with me? What's going on? Mm-hmm. What's the matter with me? And instead, it's a reframe. It's not about what's the matter with me. It's about what matters most to me. And one important thing about this reset and what it does is that it keeps the rule of two in mind. And the rule of two is really how your brain responds to change. The example that you used of having all of these various plans in place and all of these steps that you have to take, you know, it's the everything but the kitchen sink analogy. Mm-hmm. And what happens? Like, so January 1st, let's say you make all these New Year's resolutions, and then by February, you're done. You haven't done any of those. And that's not you. It's not a personal failing. It's just how the brain works. Your brain can only sustain two new changes at a time if you want those changes to stick. Anything more, and that is not sustainable. And the reason is because there was a landmark study done ages ago in the 1960s. It was by two psychiatrists. And it was a real seminal study because it looked at 50 of the most common conditions, including happy things like marriages, births of children, promotion, excellent personal accomplishment, life events, along with what we perceive, things like negative life events, divorce, death, job loss, unemployment, etc. And what these researchers found that life events cumulatively, whether they are good or bad, have an influence on your stress. So the things that happen to you that are positive, the things that happen to you that are negative, all of these cause some form of stress because your brain is adapting to these changes.
Okay.
And so your brain can only really handle two things at a time. So the example of a New Year's resolution, right? We have a long list of 20 things. The reason that it's not sticking is not because you are weak. It's not a personal failing. It is simply because you need to just pare it down to two things. So as you're creating your most goal, it's one goal that you're trying to reach, right? And so figuring out a couple of the resets that could help, the strategies that could help you achieve that, and do those two at a time. Give yourself 8 weeks, because it does take 8 weeks to build a habit. And then once you have achieved those two things and you've been able to fold those into your life, then add two more things, and then add two more things. So using that rule of two approach is really the way forward. It's a way to work with your biology rather than against it.
Oh, I'm always a fan of that, especially when that biology piece clears up why we think we are failing at something when we're making it a personal failing. It's like, nope, this is just biology. This is just the way our brains and bodies work. So let's work with it.
Yeah, your brain and your body are not meant to sustain huge lifestyle overhauls during periods of stress. There's just not enough bandwidth. So aim for those two things at a time.
Okay. So after we've had more of that time to kind of try to move up more towards that prefrontal cortex, what else can we do to reset our stress?
So once we get that foundational element and a roadmap, then you can start thinking about creating a little space. So find quiet in your noisy world. And the two biggest shifts that you want to make when you are trying to find quiet in your noisy world is, number one, create digital boundaries. Mm. And the second is to protect your sleep. And those are very tied together because, for example, with digital boundaries, what does that mean? We are engaged with our devices mostly from the minute we wake up all the way through till the end of the day and sometimes throughout the night for many people, or some people, let me say. Right when you wake up in the morning, often more than 50% of people, the first thing that they do is check their phones. And so that is setting off a whole cascade of chemical reactions in your brain to continue heightening your stress. So you may have had a restful sleep or perhaps not very restful sleep. We'll talk about sleep in a second and how stress impacts sleep. So my first strategy would be to get your phone off your nightstand. Invest in a low-cost alarm clock instead. Create a bit of a buffer. So right when you're waking up, you're not engaging immediately in headlines and your work email and all of the activities that you have to do for the day. Give yourself a second. Stretch. Take in the morning light. Open up both eyes, because often we're checking these headlines with one eye closed still. Maybe visit the bathroom, brush your teeth, and then check the news. This is not about becoming a digital monk. In fact, studies have shown that abstinence from digital devices is not very helpful for health and well-being.
Okay.
Decreasing your reliance with your digital devices is actually what's more helpful. So decreasing your reliance, reconsidering your relationship with your phone, all very important things. We have boundaries with every relationship in our life, our partners, our children, our coworkers, our friends. And yet we have no boundaries, exceedingly porous boundaries, when it comes to our relationship with our digital devices. And so the first reset is to create a digital boundary, geographic boundaries, keeping your phone off your nightstand. And then during the day, keep it out of arm's reach, away from your workstation. And the reason you want to do these sorts of digital boundaries is because that amygdala, when you're feeling a sense of stress and cave person mode, you are hypervigilant. Your fight or flight response is on. The fight or flight response is your stress response. And you are scanning for danger. The amygdala, that's what it does. It is all about survival and self-preservation. And so what's our modern day version of scanning for danger? Scrolling. We scroll, and that is what doom scrolling is all about.
Sure.
We scroll. We're looking around. Are we safe? Oh, no. This has happened. Oh, I don't feel safe. Then your hypervigilance kicks in some more. And then you scroll some more. And then you scroll some more. So it is a vicious cycle. And it's all powered by the same machinery. That's what news consumption is powered by, the amygdala. And so how can you get that prefrontal cortex to take over again and say, you know what, you are safe and there are many things that we can do to help you feel safe? That is all about digital boundaries. It's about being intentional with your media consumption. It's about making things a little more inconvenient, not too much, just a touch more inconvenient. And so you avoid the primal urge to scroll because it is a primal urge. And instead, you can become more intentional and parent yourself. You know, we are so clear with our kids. I'm a working mother. You are too.
Yeah.
We are so clear with our kids about screen time and bedtime and all of these things. And yet we don't have any screen times for us. We can be on screens at all hours of the day and night if we want. Of course, the adult brain is not developing in the same way as a child's, but certainly because of the concept of neuroplasticity, it's still developing. Neuroplasticity is just a word meaning that your brain actively changes. And in fact, studies have shown that it does change physically and chemically. It changes based on what you feed it. And so when you create digital boundaries, when you create a little space and spaciousness in your everyday life, this is another way of, like, you don't need to go to Bali. You can try to manage your stress right here in the here and now, by creating this space and time, just a brief moment to help reset your stress. And then sleep, you know, this is so tied. Screens are so tied to sleep, especially for all of us as adults, and really aiming to protect your sleep like the vital resource it is. And that first step of taking your phone off your nightstand can help. And there's lots of other strategies. But really, the central tenet of all of this is that your screen time and your sleep are very much tied, and really actively working to become more intentional with your digital consumption and media use can help also protect your sleep.
Sounds like a two birds, one stone kind of situation. You know, one can help the other so drastically. So that's a good place to start. And if they're still struggling with it, that's where I think it's worth digging into more of the techniques that you offer in your book. So much of what you've shared, and even just these two resets, are very habit and behavior based, which I think to me feels very exciting because I've lived this out. But for people who were maybe like me and I haven't lived it out yet, because that's a whole other story that my listeners all know about, so I'm not going to bore you with it. It can feel both like, oh, someone's telling me to take a bubble bath thing. How is what you're sharing different than those Band-Aids versions of go to the spa or take a bubble? Even though I do think they help when you're not in a chronic state of maladaptive stress, right? It can help. How is what you're talking about different than both the Band-Aid self-care kind of things people push and also just the mindset, just mind over matter, come on, just get over it?
So to answer that question, I can share a little bit more of my story. When I was a stressed medical resident working 80 hours a week, I had palpitations across my chest. It felt like a stampede of wild horses. Happened every night for several weeks, never during the day. Went to go see my doctor. She did a full medical workup, heart ultrasound and EKG, blood tests, you name it, she did it. And at the end, she had a big reassuring smile. Congratulations, everything's normal. It's probably just stress. Just try to relax more. Try to relax more. I was working 80 hours a week. I had very little time. So I did what anyone else would do when you hear that phrase, just try to relax. I watched movies. I had a spa day, got a massage, got a new haircut, had some dinner with friends, spent time with family. Nothing seemed to work. Mm-hmm. And only when I dug into the science and started reading everything under the sun of what happens to your brain and your body with stress, what are strategies that can change the biology of your stress to rewire your brain and body for less stress, is when I got myself out of my own stress struggle. And then I said I wanted to be the doctor I needed during that difficult time. And so to answer your question, yes, bubble baths, Netflix binges, spa days, pedicures, manicures, yummy dinners, even a quick trip to someplace warm when it's the dark, cold winter, at least in the Northeast in the U.S. where I live. Mm-hmm. All of these are wonderful short bursts of what are called hedonic pursuits or hedonic happiness. They give you that little jolt of joy. There's a real chemical reaction in the brain, but it's not long lasting and it doesn't change your brain. Versus a lot of the resets like protecting your sleep, creating digital boundaries, you know, some form of daily movement every day to get out of your head and into your body, a gratitude practice. There's, 15 different resets in this particular book of mine that do change the biology of stress and actively rewire your brain and your body for less stress and more resilience. So while a bubble bath is lovely as a thing to try once in a while, it's along that prescription of just relax more.
Yes.
And it feels, it doesn't feel good because it is somewhat of a gaslighting of your lived experience when you're told, oh, just try to relax. It goes back to toxic resilience. It's just something, it's probably just something inside of you. Just toughen up. Just try to relax and then you'll feel better in the morning and then you'll be able to take on all that you are meant to take on. Instead, actively every day, a little bit every day. A lot of the resets only take 5 minutes, and sometimes a brain break can take as little as 10 seconds. When you do these things incrementally throughout the day over the course of several weeks, these things change your brain. and they change your brain for less stress and more resilience. A bubble bath is lovely, but it's not changing your brain.
And that's what I love about those behavioral changes, those habits, why they are more effective is because they help with that baseline. They help raise the baseline. So you feel more like, oh, I'm back to a healthier version of this. So when I am able to take a bubble bath or do like a face mask or go to dinner with friends, that feels good. But I don't have such a huge drop off after to this like really low baseline. And that's probably why a lot of people think that they're not handling their stress well, like when they're trying to fix it. It's just because they're not doing it in these deeper ways that you have so thoughtfully and so expertly taught us today. So I want to know all the resets, and I know my listeners do too, but this is where I'm going to say you're going to need to get the book, because not only are they more built out there, but the strategies that you've already shared so many of, it's full of practical ways you can apply them in ways that I know I need, and so do my listeners. So while there's five that you talk about in your book, and we've covered two of them, is there one in particular that you find yourself coming back to often that you would like to share with us today?
Yeah, there's one reset particularly, sync your brain to your body, and that's about the mind-body connection and how to tap into your mind-body connection. It was the first strategy I ever learned. So when I was that stress resident working 80 hours a week, trying to find my way out of my stress struggle, as many of your listeners are likely at that exact step, it's stop, breathe, and be. And it's a 3-second exercise that can be repeated throughout the day. I did it about 30 to 40 times a day. And I did it every time I would knock on the door of a patient room as I was turning the doorknob. It was my doorknob exercise. Wow. And what you do is you stop, you breathe, and kind of ground yourself, and you be. And it takes 3 seconds, and just saying, I said that to myself over and over and over again. It's really great with mundane tasks. So right before you're joining that Zoom, a mundane task that is about to start a cascade of negative emotions or stress, right when you're leaving the house, for example, you know, dropping your kids off at school or at the bus stop. I do that all the time in the mornings. The doorknob, I just stop, breathe, and be. And it's the instructions are in the title. And that 3-second exercise over and over and over incrementally throughout the day can have a profound impact. First, because you tap into the mind-body connection, you decrease your anxiety, because anxiety is a forward-focused emotion focused on what if. What if this doesn't go right? What if I fail? What if I'm not good enough? What if, right? We know that all too well, that runaway train of anxious thoughts. And stop, breathe, be helps you move out of what if thinking and back towards what is. And when you are more present and grounded in what is, then that prefrontal cortex can take over. But what if is, of course, powered completely by the amygdala. It's a self-protective mechanism. It's meant to keep you safe, because if you stay in your comfort zone and listen to that inner critic, you won't try something new. And then, you know, new can be scary. So really focusing on stop, breathe, be, it works great in the mornings. There are so many moments and pockets of the day when you can try stop, breathe, be. It also can help you tap into, you know, a greater sense of patience. And, you know, we all know what mom rage is, right? Really helps you tap into a greater sense of presence and patience and spaciousness in the here and now. It's a way to practice mindfulness, but in the midst of a chaotic home life, or, you know, and happy chaos, of course. I don't mean to say that it's unhappy.
We all know what you mean. Yes.
It's good, just like frantic energy.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that goes back to what we do. You know, we were talking about how we can downplay it so much by saying it's such a good thing. Why is it so stressful?
But
that's
right.
Is life. And so we're going to go full circle here and just say validate. If you're feeling like your baseline is not working for you, then you're stressed and you deserve to feel stressed. And then move through these ways where you can reset your stress levels in ways that are both deep and practical. You know, I learned so much from you today. I love your book so much. I want to direct people to your book, The 5 Resets. We'll make sure we link to that in the show notes, as well as to your Instagram, which is always so helpful. Is there anything that you're like, if there's one thing you can do today after listening to this episode that I think you should do, what would that be, Aditi?
The number one thing that you can do after listening to this episode is to increase your levels of self-compassion and give yourself so much grace. Because when you have a sense of gentleness with yourself as you are moving through your day, your life, your world, that is just one of the most effective ways to reset your stress and build resilience from the inside out.
So don't just get over it. Not just mind over matter. I love that so much. What a powerful send-off for all of us. Dr. Aditi Nurikar, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Monica. Always such a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, fantastic. I hope this episode gave you the hug and kick in the pants you need to grow. I will now share the progress pointers. These are the notes I took so you don't have to, and those on my newsletter get them in a graphic form each week. You can sign up at aboutprogress.com/newsletter. Number one, stress can be healthy, adaptive, and unhealthy, maladaptive. You know it's unhealthy when your stress is dysfunctional, unproductive, and causes mental and physical manifestations thanks to staying stuck in the heightened stress response in the amygdala part of your brain. The goal is to live with healthy stress. Number two, true resilience honors your human limitations and boundaries, understanding your need for rest and recovery. Toxic resilience perpetuates the lie that by doing more, you can stress less, but it only exacerbates stress further. Aim for true resilience. Number three, your brain is built like a dam. You can keep it together during the stress, but the dam breaks after the stress circumstances are better. This is called the delay stress response, and it is quite normal. Number four, you can begin to move through that response via resets, starting with creating a most goal that becomes your why, and most stands for motivating, objective, small, and timely. Use the backwards plan to identify small and simple ways you can move towards that goal, often via habits. And number five, other stress reset strategies that help you rewire your brain include remembering the rule of two, creating space to find quiet in your noisy world, holding to digital boundaries, protecting your sleep, and syncing your brain with your body, like stop, breathe, be, and other habits that help you regularly complete the stress response cycle. Your Do Something Challenge for this week is to try the stop, breathe, and be strategy that she shared near the end. I just thought that was a great, doable thing that we could all start with. Stop, breathe, be. I know that this was a very packed episode. I mean, the show notes alone were one of our most detailed ones we've done in a while. If you want more of the details, then again, get on our newsletter. And if it's well past the time that the newsletter got sent out with this graphic, just ask for it. Say, hey, can I have the graphic from the episode with Dr. Aditi Nurikar, and we'll send it to you. I also want to encourage you to check out Dr. Nurikar's book, The Five Resets. I used her book as well as Burnout, another book that we have featured on the show via both of its authors, Emily and Amelia Nagoski. Anyway, both of these books I used as part of a workshop that I've been teaching on stress to our people because they are just so valuable and also easy to read, but very research-backed. And I think it's something we all need to know better about how to deal with stress in ways that are going to help us show up as ourselves. This show is listener supported. That means for a small fee each month, if you subscribe as a supporter, you make it so the lights of this business stay on. And in return, you get access to so many benefits. There are three levels of supporters, and each level gets more and more benefits. One of my favorite benefits is our premium podcast called More Personal, where we lean into the personal side of personal development. And one of the episodes we feature once a month is the deep dive. And I just aired one of my favorite deep dive episodes yet. And it was me kind of meshing my two favorite worlds of perfectionism and British royalty. The topic was perfectionism in British royal women. And I took on four British royal women. I'm sure you could even name who they are right off the bat here. And I dove into how perfectionism has manifested in their lives and also their struggles. You can sign up at aboutprogress.com/support. And you can always support the show for free. Just listening alone is a huge support. If you want to go one step further, copy the URL for this episode and share it with a friend that you think would really appreciate what we learned today.
Thank you so much for listening. Now go and do something with what you learned today.
How do you move from being back here in the amygdala to being up here in the
prefrontal cortex.
Thank you. I was like, it's not hyper. Thank you. The prefrontal cortex. But how are these habits different than just that mindset thing we talked about? Like, oh gosh, let me think about that. How did you say it in the beginning? When you're in the mind part, not grin and bear it.
Get mind over it. Matter?
Yes, mind thank over. You. That was it. So how is what you're talking about different